It's time for another edition of The Mincing Rascals, another long episode today. Hi, it's John Williams, but heck, where are you going to go? We're all supposed to be locked down, and I believe the governor and mayor both said, and listen to The Mincing Rascals podcast. So thanks for finding us again, and would you please tell your friends to check us out, too, maybe over their Thanksgiving break. Share the Mincing Rascals podcast with your pals and give us a good rating if you can. And patronize our sponsor, the Joint Relief Institute. They are in Oak Brook. They are in Northbrook now, too, and Orland Park. The same phone number for either location. They'll get you to the one that's best for you. At the Joint Relief Institute, they'll use digital imaging to see where your knee tissue is deteriorated, your shoulder and elbow, too. It's a Joint Relief Institute. Anyway, they'll see where the tissue's gone, and then they put a lubricant into that spot. Sounds pretty simple, doesn't it? It's all they do. They get 4.9 reviews on Google. They've done this tens of thousands of times. And when you walk into any of the Joint Relief Institute sites, you're going to be greeted by positive, happy, cheerful people because they know you're about to get pain relief. And that means your life is about to change. You're going to be able to go up and down the stairs, get in and out of bed or the car pain-free, go for a walk and not worry about slipping because your step is just a little tender. What's the phone number? 708-888-0000. Call that number and say hello. 708, even if you don't have knee pain, I'm telling you, they are delightful. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain. Today is Thursday. It's November 19th, 2020. It's 1:38 in the afternoon. Hi, I'm John Williams, and this is another edition of The Mincing Rascals, the weekly podcast we record via Zoom throughout Chicagoland. I'm at WGN Radio, and you can hear me weekdays from 9 to noon.
I'm Lisa Donovan. I write the Spin Politics newsletter for the Chicago Tribune.
And I'm Heather Sharon of WTTW News.
I'm Eric Zorn, the increasingly impatient columnist from the Chicago Tribune.
Last week, you were the increasingly optimistic or cheery. What are you impatient for?
I was amused last week. I'm still amused, by the way.
That's right. It was amused.
I took a lot of heat for being amused over this whole fight that Trump has been waging. From people, including Johanna, my wife, who thinks that it does not find this the least bit funny. I find Trump's tantrum to be amusing.
Yeah.
I'm impatient, though, at this point with the Republicans who are not coming around saying, look, okay, Donald, you lost. Let's put the toys away and go home.
Maybe.
I don't think that's probably their view of it. I think that he concedes it feels to me like it's still Trump's party, and they have to walk lightly. I mean, Adam Kinzinger, sort of the only Chicago area Republican, even said as much on CNN this week. He's like, you know, people are either not speaking up or kind of riding the line. He's already congratulated Biden, but he said on CNN, I think they're waiting for him to come around, you know, to accepting this, and then they feel like they can speak. I'm not saying it's right. I'm telling you where he's coming from, Eric, before you start in on me.
I'm not going to start in on you, Lisa, but I'm going to start in on this idea that you can't take two tracks at the same time. He doesn't have to concede. I don't care if he concedes. Conceding is not illegal.
Yeah, right. No. Exactly.
He can fight all he wants in court, and that's all fine. It's the transition that's not going forward. It's the money that's not coming from the GSA to help the Biden team get up to speed. I thought that there was a Dr. Fauci had an excellent metaphor during one of the Sunday chat shows. We said this is like a relay race where you want the one runner to get up to speed before you hand them the baton. You don't want to give it
right.
To
no,
the
I heard him. Start. Yeah.
So yeah. I mean, that was an excellent so let's say there was a chance that Trump could be inaugurated for a second term, that mm-hmm. the election is going to be declared a fraud and everything, which there isn't. But let's say there was, you would still want to prepare for the contingency that Biden will be president. I think it is. I'm really impatient about that.
And it makes perfect sense to do that. Sort of like, okay, you can challenge these things. You can do two things at once. You know, you could, if you feel that you need to challenge these, and you think that sort of there were some things awry in the election, go ahead and do that. But you can also sort of let him in on especially Biden. He's already been down this road before. He knows what the drill is. He just needs to be brought up to date on what's happening. You know, he's not going to go out and spread sort of, you know, super secrets or make them public. I heard somebody on Trump's team say that. It was sort of like, oh, what? or concern for national security purposes that, you know, he's debriefed and then there's a recount and Trump wins and now he has all these state secrets. It's sort of like, okay.
I also wonder, too, if they go to say they do have one of these meetings with one of these agencies or departments and they say, OK, what have you got? And they're like, not much. Right. I mean, does anybody really think that there's a health care plan or a COVID plan or something that's so coherent and important? Intelligence? Yes. But I wonder really how fruitful a transition meeting would be from an administration that is governing from Donald Trump's gut anyway. Lisa, you sort of hit on something. Do you all agree that this year's election is a great reminder of how safe our election process is, our votes are? Think of the things the process this year survived, right? Vote by mail with an underfunded postal service. Long lines that required people to wait sometimes hours to vote. The potential for cyber attacks from Russia and China. And razor-thin margins that hold up count after recount. Mm-hmm. And even though he's not going to be a good loser, the president's campaign is availing itself of every legitimate appeal. And those are all being exhausted. So if Joe Biden gets sworn in January, and that's an if for me still, by the way, we should see 2020, you know, not as a failing election system, but as a sturdy one that worked.
I'm with you on that. I just worry that while those are the facts, you have a president saying repeatedly that there were illegal votes cast and that there was all sorts of shenanigans going on. And while I think it's important to say that's not accurate, those are frankly lies. You know, we've seen time and again that Donald Trump has sort of been able to convince people of things that are not accurate or based in truth. And I think that sense that this election worked, I think that's factual. You're 100% right. But I think, you know, there was a poll that showed that 88% of Republicans do not think this election was free or fair. And I think that we can say all we want. Here are the facts. Frankly, those facts have not proven to be a very robust defense to the president's undermining of this democratic process. And once again, we're sort of in unprecedented times that we don't really know how it's going to play out. Because right now, there's not really an avenue through the courts for the president to overturn the will of the voters. What he's counting on now is one or more state legislatures stepping in to sort of change the way that the electors are sent to the Electoral College on December 14th. I think that remains a very, very long shot. But we've seen that the president has sought to literally toss out votes cast in Michigan and in Wisconsin, cast by Black voters. And that, I think, we have to understand will do just tremendous, tremendous damage to our system and people's faith in that system.
That's why I say if. I mean, he almost got that pulled off in Michigan.
Because even if the Wayne County Board of Canvassers had not certified the election, it would have gone to the Michigan State Board of Canvassers. And even if the Michigan State Board of Canvassers doesn't certify, there's a mechanism for the governor to step in and to send the electors as appointed by the voters. But again, these are all sort of mechanisms like a rusty car that haven't been really tested.
Yeah. So everybody give me your 0 to 100 probability that Biden is, in fact, going to be sworn in as president.
99.99.
Heather?
Yeah, that's where I am.
Lisa?
I'm a little bit nervous. I'm
83.6.
I'm nervous about it, so I don't know if I can put a number on it. I do think that sort of the count and the recount and all of these things that are going on are terrific backstops. I'm sure there were human errors here and there that happened because we're human. But I just don't know. I really don't know. I couldn't put a bet on it. I don't know what they're going to pull out of their hat after today's press conference with Rudy Giuliani. It doesn't sound like they have much. It sounds like this thing is going to fade away. But right now I'm taking a 50-50 on it.
Well, I want to hear about that press conference. Can you give me a, what's the debrief on it? What happened?
There was a press conference, with the president's, campaign legal team, right? And they come out and they say that there is a kind of a centralized kind of scheme to throw the election Biden's way, right? And so he goes into this whole sort of acting mode, recalls a court scene out of My Cousin Vinny.
Did you all watch My Cousin Vinny? You know the movie? It's one of my favorite war movies because he comes from Brooklyn. And when the nice lady who said she saw, and then he says to her, how many fingers do I got up? And she says, three. Well, she was too far away to see it was only two. These people were further away than my cousin Vinny was from the witness. They couldn't see a thing.
How far were the defendants from you when you saw them entering the sack of suds?
About 100 feet.
How many fingers am I holding up now?
He likens that to people watching the vote counting, Republicans watching the vote counting, and not being close enough to really know what they saw or being close enough to know what they saw. And all the while, I mean, Twitter's going crazy because he seems to have sort of what I thought was initially maybe he got some ink. It appeared to be sort of some hair dye coming down, streaming down his cheeks. He was very sweaty. And it was just very odd. Nothing new at this press conference.
Or nothing true either. I mean, an administration that lies, a campaign that lies, somehow they found a way to be even more deceitful this week than maybe at any point.
And John, the Fox News reporter at the White House came on and was very strident about how he just walked in front of the podium and delivered a string of lies. Which I was sort of, you know, Fox gets hit kind of hard for, you know, they're sort of more right wing and they're like, there's no truth to this sort of software. This thing just sort of went in about 8,000 different directions. Somehow Venezuela is sort of involved with this company that created the software and that they have alliances with Democrats and on. And
well,
on.
Lisa, what seems to be their end game here? Obviously, you're not going to be able to find enough votes to give the elections in these states to Trump. That you can't possibly do that. Is there an end game to say to have the legislatures appoint different electors or to throw the whole thing to say we can't have a result in Pennsylvania so that we're going to throw it to Congress?
I think it's an attempt to get a set of different electors. But I cannot remember on Sunday there was a professor who's at Harvard who was tracking this. And ticked off sort of the four likely, what he called the likely states that might be willing to do this. And the governor and sort of the Republican leaders were like, absolutely not. We're going to send who we're going to send. And we're not going to be doing anything of the sort. We'll send the electors that the popular vote is telling us to send, you know, that is dictating this.
And well, I can imagine a situation in this country where you would take an election that Joe Biden won. I know the popular vote doesn't count, but he's won by more than 5 million votes, mm-hmm. and he's got a thumping victory in the Electoral College. And to take that away from the majority of voters and from the Electoral College majority, to take it away on these crazy conspiracies and these notions that some of these ballots were found in boxes, and you're right, there are always going to be mistakes. I mean, first of all, it would be the end of democracy if the losers accept that they've lost. Then why hold elections anymore?
I mean, I think there is a longer game. This is where I sort of move toward where you're saying like it's 99% chance that Joe Biden will be sworn in January, because I do feel like there's a longer game here. They know it. You know, you guys know it. the people much smarter. I mean,
what's the game?
Everybody knows it. The long game is that he's either going to run again or that they're going to sow this discontent and just, you know, rake him over the coals for 4 years. You know, Trump feels that he was raked over the coals for 4 years. So he's going to make sure that his followers make Biden and Harris basically pay. And then they try to get their person in. And so it's just sort of trying to sow this chaos, you know. So you have people like sort of, I have relatives who are going on and on and on about, you know, about how journalists are not covering this, that these Democrats are kooky and don't know, you know, they're
why aren't journalists covering it enough? I hear that too.
All sides of it, excuse me.
I know that. No, but I hear that too. Somebody was challenging me about something along these lines on the radio the other day, and my answer to that generally is because it's not true. So they don't have to every day debunk the myth that you're consuming. Did you guys see what America First Network, Heather? What's
the name? America News Network.
Yeah. It's working. Trump is sending people to that network. And if you thought that Fox is cuckoo bananas, that thing is conspiratorial.
Did you all watch the meeting with the Wayne County election board? And that it was a public meeting. I mean, really, in a way, I felt like that was a snapshot of everything that's going on in this country and the utter chaos. You've got sort of, you know, the GOP saying, you know, we're not going to certify this. This is fake. This is fake. And you've got people saying, you know, you're taking away our rights. How could you do this? Then you have one of these GOP commissioners saying, well, fine, we'll certify suburban Wayne County, but we're not going to certify Detroit. Which is sort of goes to your point, Heather, I think you said it, or Eric, somebody said it about sort of shutting down sort of or disavowing that counts in predominantly Black communities. Well, Detroit is 78% African-American, overwhelmingly Democratic. I mean, you cannot, it just feels to me like it's a snapshot of the chaos in this country.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's like I said the other day, not until his hand is on the Bible and the Bible is put away will I believe that this thing is going to happen, just because I don't have a crystal ball and I don't know what I don't know. Like if you just said, take the facts on the table now, yeah, Biden. But who knows if you get some state legislature, some canvassing board, some judge.
Yeah.
The CDC says don't travel. Infections are up. In New York City, the positivity rate in their public schools went from 2.5 to 3. So they're shutting the schools down, public schools in New York. In South Dakota, meanwhile, the positivity rate is 22%. And the governor still says we don't have to wear a mask. It violates our individual freedoms. And here's another civics lesson from 2020, right? We're a union of states and counties and cities, and everybody gets to sort of govern themselves the way they want. And boy, if you wanted a reminder of how different we are, 2.5 is the threshold in New York City for the schools, and 22% is not high enough for the governor of South Dakota, where she held her first press conference in 3 months. Yesterday, in 3 months. JB has one every 25 minutes. She has her first press conference in 3 months, and she says, we're not going to wear face masks.
Well, I'm going to continue to blame Donald Trump for the politicization of this pandemic, that, you know, he turned it into an issue that had to do with his reelection, and it wasn't he didn't treat it seriously like a public health matter, and he wasn't able to bring the country together and to push forth the message that there are times when we all get together and pull on the same oars, and we sacrifice because we know what's coming. And Trump's inability to do that, his decision to be a cheerleader rather than a truth teller, has led to there being this. And I see it in my email all the time. Is, you know, you get people who identify themselves as conservative Republican Trump supporters telling me that they're gonna have a huge Thanksgiving, and screw you to all of us who are saying don't gather for Thanksgiving, and they don't have to wear a mask, they have to wear their face diapers, they call it, and it's just this truculence, this stubbornness, this feeling like our rights are being trampled on. Whereas, you know, when this country can come together, if you remember the sort of the what they call it, the 9/12 spirit, when the country came together right after the terrorist attacks, and we all felt like we were together. That had to happen here, and it just didn't. And you know, it's not going to get better now that Biden's president. It's probably going to get worse because there is no opportunity now for Republicans to stand up as one and say, look, we're all on the same page here. We're all Americans. We're trying to save American lives. We're going to do what it takes to save American lives. And if we save American lives and get this pandemic under control, we can reopen our businesses and our schools and pull out of this even before the vaccine arrives.
Eric, do you think that that's another example, though, of Trump not being the cause but the symptom?
Yes.
Yeah. No. He didn't cause the pandemic, but I think he made it much worse.
I mean,
well, I mean, if you look back at the 1918 flu pandemic, you had, you know, people literally jailed over their refuse to go to wear a mask. And, you know, this is nothing new under the sun, essentially. But I think the president has a pretty unprecedented way of sort of pushing on the pressure points that have always been in our society to sort of exacerbate those issues to a point that has really sort of left us all sort of struggling to get our bearings.
And I think that there is this disconnect. Speaking as somebody who, I grew up in Nebraska, I have family in South Dakota, you name it, Iowa, they're all there. And I think that this notion of being in the middle of the country, of long being, I guess Nebraska isn't anymore, it's now a battleground state, or at least Eastern Nebraska is. It being flyover country and sort of this disconnect between, you know, the government and the people, and it being sparsely populated, so people kind of make their own rules, or they used to, because you don't see a neighbor for miles and miles if you're a farmer, if you're farming or you're a cattle rancher. And I do think that there is a little bit of that culture there too, where it's sort of like, I'm not seeing anybody. I don't need to wear a mask. Even though you might live in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and you do live, 10 feet apart, and you do go into crowded grocery stores, there's just sort of this mentality, I think, that people can't get past. They don't need to listen to anybody. And I personally don't know if that's, if Trump is to blame for doing anything other than opening the door for that to mm-hmm. be maybe okay. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if that wouldn't have been going on anyway.
Well, look what JB's going through here in Illinois. He's a Democrat. He's a billionaire. But I mean, I wonder if it's Trump. It's a missed opportunity, Eric. But JB's a Democrat who's also trying to get people to see things his way. And boy, is he getting pushback. It's kind of the upside down of Donald Trump land.
Well, yeah, but the reason that he's getting that so much pushback is because there's so many people who are downstate Republican-leaning people who are taking their cues from the president. It's politicized, but I don't believe that J.B. Pritzker has made the moves that he's made about this pandemic for political advantage. He's not even facing re-election for a few more years.
Okay, but it's been pretty easy for those people to fall into this trap, and however great Donald Trump's powers of persuasion are, I think that there's something more than just an allegiance to Donald Trump at play here. So what's my point? That maybe you need to be more inclusive in the decision-making process or what, I don't know. Or maybe it's just American nature to not like to be told how to live your life, especially from a gilded billionaire, right, who doesn't seem to be following the rules as well as he wants you to follow the rules.
Well, yes. I mean, I see what you're saying, and I think you're right. Even under ideal circumstances, if the president and Mitch McConnell had joined hands with Nancy Pelosi and all worn, at a proper distance and all put on masks and all stressed the need to follow the same rules, the same guidelines, you would still have a lot of people saying, hell with you, I'm going to do what I want. This is America. But I think you'd have far fewer of them, and I think you would have had less spread of the disease, and I think we'd be better off today if that had happened. So,
Heather, are you surprised that we are where we are today in Illinois? We've stepped back a tier?
No, because I look at these numbers every day, and what was happening was very clear starting back in October, to be quite honest with you. So in August and September, my family loosened up a little bit. We saw my mom, and we started letting my daughter have play dates with her friends, and they were wearing masks, and we were sort of being safe. I was at the gym at the same time as somebody who then later tested positive for COVID-19. So I stayed home for 14 days, really out of an abundance of caution, even though I wore my mask and was socially distanced from people at the gym, but you just don't know. I tried to be careful. But by that point, which was mid-October, it was clear that there was a big surge in cases, and we just sort of shut everything down that we had been doing. So, I honestly was shocked at the beginning of October when the mayor allowed some bars that didn't serve food to reopen at a limited capacity and sort of loosened other restrictions, because it really just took off from there. There's no evidence of a correlation or a causation, but that it happened right at the same time, and it was clear that it was happening.
And the weather's been warm. I mean, look at what happened in November, 70-degree days in a row, and October was pleasant. You had Halloween. There was just a number of ways for people to take full advantage of all the rope that they were going to give them, and then some.
I think what people don't realize is that so much of this relies on other people telling you what they're doing. Because, for example, you would think that if you send your kid to school, other parents wouldn't send their kid to school if there had been a COVID case in the household. And we've just seen time and again that other people have made other decisions that have exposed a larger group of people. And even if you feel like you're doing everything right, you're sort of subject to what everybody else is doing that you come in contact with. And that's what makes this so hard and how it takes off so fast.
One of the things, I don't know if this struck you, Heather, at all, but one of the things that the mayor said this week, I couldn't help but think, oh my God, there are actual people, there are people who are frontline workers who are afraid to get tested. They may not be feeling well, but they're afraid to get tested because if they do, they know that they can't work and they are the sole source of support. And she was really trying to drill in and reach those people. I mean, you know, she didn't spend a ton of time on it, but I mean, it just shows you sort of like I'm not out reporting those stories. So it hadn't occurred to me that was happening. Like, oh, my God. And so it's not to sort of contradict or say, oh, well, maybe that's why. I mean, keep your kids home if possible, if there is a case in the house. It just strikes me that there's sort of some almost sort of like, if I don't know, I don't have to deal with it.
Well, think about it. If Heather is able to stay home and work from home because right. she's in the media. Mm-hmm. If she were more of a frontline worker, had a job that required being out in public with the public, and she was at the gym with someone who was diagnosed, you know, would she voluntarily skip 2 weeks of work and the pay that comes with that in order to stay
right.
home? Probably
right.
not. And, you know,
that's why it was sort of like it kind of hit me in the heart. Because it's sort of like, oh my God, this may be part of it too.
But we need to support those people, right? We need to support those people. We need to.
Yes. And she was trying to say that we are here to support you. The city is here for you.
Well, with money?
Right. There, I mean, literally the only thing the city is saying is that if you test positive or if you're sick, you know, you can't be fired. But there's nothing in the city code that says your employer has to pay you for those days. Right. And if you're already on a knife's edge and it's, do I go to work and maybe infect somebody or do I not go to work and my kids don't eat? I mean, that is literally an impossible situation. Okay. And, you know, shame on all of us for living in this society for forcing people to make those decisions.
Well, and Washington doesn't seem at all likely to step in anytime soon.
That's the problem. I think that looms over all of this. A lot of these decisions would be more easily made. A lot of these problems would be more easily solved if we had $1,200 a person and another $600 for unemployment benefits or some version of that. Y'all figure out what's most palatable and affordable, but then just do that. But we give mixed signals then. So we say, okay, but we've got to support the restaurants and go in at 50% capacity or go in at 50% capacity into retail stores. And then, my God, if you do, what are you, an idiot? You're endangering all of us. Those businesses are not frivolous. If we say they can be open, then they should be able to, without shaming their customers, they should be able to open the doors and welcome people in. I'm hearing a lot of that. It's like, oh my God, what do? You flew? You went to Mexico for a week because you could finally get away, or you went to a store, or you were just hanging out at that restaurant that day. And all of those are legal things that we want everybody to do because the federal government ain't going to help. So let's allow these businesses to survive. But then if you try to do that as a consumer, you're part of the equation now. Then we say, oh my God, you're an idiot or you're irresponsible. We say both things with equal vigor, and they are completely contradictory in my mind. And the only way to fix that, Eric, is start writing checks. then let's accommodate these people who are just trying to make a living.
I mean, and also, I'm sure I don't want to get a lot of backlash over this, but I'm going to say it. There were people who they probably should have lowered the threshold for who got those checks. I'm going to say it. I had to take a furlough. I got unemployment. That was fine. But I would have rather seen some of my brothers and sisters who are not making a lot of money, who are on the front line, get that money. I'm just going to say it. I'm not making millions of dollars as a journalist, but I mean, I could have survived without that $1,200 check and have taken care of that in donating some of it. But I will say that I just hope that they do it at a lower tier so that maybe if there are a couple more rounds of maybe helping people out, that it goes to people who truly, okay, life mm-hmm. or death, lights on, or power off, that it really makes a difference.
Yeah, yeah. And they said, I know the first time they said this, and maybe they're still squabbling over this point, we do not have the infrastructure to figure out who made how much money, what the cost of living was in that state, and you know, quote unquote, fairly parse it out. So we're just going to do a blanket number again. But they're not even doing that. I mean, that's, Eric, that's the biggest frustration for me is this abdication of their responsibilities. That's the job of the Congress, and they just aren't doing it.
Yeah, and it looks like it's going to be more difficult under the Biden administration because the Republicans' motivation for compromising, and they're going to discover that they don't like deficits and debt anymore. The Republicans have been pretty blithe about that for the last 4 years, but they're going to get religion on that again very soon.
Well, it does make that Senate run in Georgia the most expensive Senate race, these runoffs, right, Eric, in history. It's going to be really interesting to see. Pardon me, I've interrupted you, but it seems like maybe the Senate won't be in Republican hands. At least there's that possibility, right?
Yeah, I don't know what I was going to say. I don't know what the polls are showing, but I'm not sure I was going to rely on the polls anyway. Clearly,
the polls were pretty accurate in Georgia, for what it's worth.
They and you know Biden won Georgia, but the looks like the Senate candidates certainly Perdue got slightly more votes than Ossoff. And,
well, there were also multiple candidates in the race, so yeah, you know, it's a little bit hard to compare.
So, well, actually, at one point I added up all the sort of Democratic leaning against the Republican leaning in both races, and I think it looked like it skewed a little bit Republican. But runoff elections are always weird, especially January is probably not that bad in Georgia, but to get people back out to the polls again in just 2 months. That's going to be a heavy lift for both parties. So it's going to be interesting to see who's motivated. And this gets back to the question about why Trump is being so obstreperous these days. And is it because he thinks it's going to fire up people in Georgia, or are the Republicans going along with him because they think it's going to fire up Republicans in Georgia to get out and support their candidates? I don't know.
Let's just go back one last time to J.B. Pritzker for a minute. He opened up a press conference the other day chastising the media. Marianne Mayhern, maybe particularly. She said, what are you going to do for Thanksgiving? What's your family's plans? He took exception to that, particularly since previously there was a picture posted on social media that inaccurately identified his daughter as a person that was eating outdoors with a big group when maybe they should not have been. And why are you raising your hand? You inaccurately identified him as one of those people. I saw the picture.
Yeah, no, I am going to stand up for Marianne Mayhern. It was a good question.
I agree.
Question about how, you know, they are asking of us to do this, to abide by these rules. And they're reasonable. We want to stop the spread of this damn thing. But she said, you know, people are wondering, so what are you doing for Thanksgiving? You said to sort of put a lid on it, you and your public health director. What are you both doing for Thanksgiving that sort of, you know, heals to these rules? And then
he broke into tears.
Well, he initially that day said, you know, I'll let you know. And then the next day came out and sort of said, I was taken aback by that question. And then went on to tell a very wrenching story about how his daughter had been trolled. That there was some photo that was posted online on social media, and that his daughter was identified as being in it in a group outside, but yet a big group that would be in violation of the rules that Lightfoot was asking people, Mayor Lightfoot was asking people to adhere to keep the group small. The governor's daughter was not in that photo. Apparently they had told a couple of these sort of media, media outlets, I'm doing air quotes, that this was in fact not her. And then people started going after her. And how does this tie to the Thanksgiving? Well, his wife and his daughter, after this whole horrible thing of his daughter basically coming under attack on social media, went to their home in Florida. And so, and there was a question at that press conference, like, well, we heard are you going to be traveling out of state? Because we heard your family is down in Florida. Well, he said that, that they had come to the decision that they were going to stay, he and his son would stay here. And so it was the first time that they were not going to spend Thanksgiving together. And the whole thing is just kind of wrenching. It's like, this is a time you really, really want to hold on to that family that you can be around. And now they're going to be separated.
Yeah,
I imagine that.
Well, when he said that, yeah, but when he was on that part of his talk, I was like, well, boo-hoo if you guys have to be separate for Thanksgiving. I didn't have a lot of sympathy for him there. If you're at a palatial place in Florida and I'm in a Gold Coast mansion, I think we'll be just fine, right?
I just felt sorry for the daughter. I mean, she's a high school age, and I just, the whole idea, it's hard enough to be in high school and be a girl and, kind of be in the spotlight, the old man is the governor, and now to have, and then to have this kind of thing happen.
Well, where it got real ugly was when this downstate attorney then, who's been championing the cause of restaurants that don't want to follow along the shutdown orders or the limited capacity orders, this downstate attorney then posts a $1,000 bounty for a photo of the Pritzker family having Thanksgiving dinner. And I thought that was outrageous and really poor behavior. He came on our station. He was on with Anna DeVlantis after he put out that bounty. And he said, I wasn't going after the family or the kids. I wasn't going after the kids. I was going after JB. If he wants to lead by example, then we'd better not see him violating that idea. But he said family. To me, family is the kids. You cannot get around that. And in a time of crazy people, look at the governor of Michigan. If you put $1,000 out and say, go get close to the first family and see if you can get a swell picture of them eating Thanksgiving dinner, you don't know what that's going to turn up. That's just that is an assault on that family. And the pushback on my show is 50-50, guys. Half of the people agree with me, and half of them said, JB, this is on you. You've created your own problem.
When you enter public life like this, when you're managing a crisis and you're asking people to take these steps, you really have to be purer than Caesar's wife when it comes to, not going out in public without not being in crowds. I think both Lightfoot and Pritzker went out to celebrate Biden's victory in crowds. I know they had masks on, but you just don't do that. You're asking people to give up so much, and you can't like get into jet and fly to Florida, to your estate in Florida. Even if you have a private jet, you've got to remember that you're leading by example. John Cass's column this morning talked about, don't act big was his basic message, which I thought was a really good advice for any politician.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is a tough time for people, and for you to not, it's just tin-eared. It was kind of like, Pritzker taking the toilets out of the mansion next to his house to save some money on property tax. That was legal. It was something that a lot of people would probably do, but you're JB Pritzker running for governor. You don't do that. It's that kind of thing. When you get into public life, the rules do change, and you can't leave yourself open to things like that.
Heather, you were going to say what about that?
I was just going to say that I think we're having this discussion sort of in an alternate universe, to be fair, because there, we learned today that the people accused of plotting to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, their plan B was to take over the state capitol and have, televised executions of elected officials. And I think that Governor Pritzker stumble when he was asked that question by Marianne Ahern? Sure. Is he the only politician to stumble when asked a question by Marianne Ahern? Absolutely not. But the fact is that he felt like his daughter's safety was in danger, and didn't have an answer at that moment. So I think that it behooves us as a news media to sort of be calm, report the facts, and try to and not sort of fall into this sort of aha, gotcha sort of, approach to these issues. I was a little bit uncomfortable in saying, in sort of this whole notion that we wanted Governor Pritzker to sort of, disclose his location in this context of the world that we're living in, especially when Governor Pritzker has not violated any of these rules for the last 6, 8, 7 months that we are. And, I don't feel like I'm sacrificing any objectivity or independence by sort of giving people the benefit of the doubt and saying,
How is he not, Heather? Didn't he go to Florida? Didn't he go to Wisconsin? Was that always within the confines of the rules?
Yeah, no, whenever he's traveled, there's been no evidence that he violated any of the rules. And I just think when you're asking about family, I was always taught that families were off limits. And in this context, I don't think it hurts us to sort of, be very careful about playing mm-hmm. into sort of this gotcha, aha sort of, environment and sort of saying, wait a minute, let's take a minute, especially because I had seen those posts about the governor's daughter. And I assumed that that's why he stumbled and that initial coverage was lacking.
But don't you think for the same reason we asked Donald Trump to wear a face mask, it would be good for J.B. Pritzker to lead by example, demonstrably so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if he had said, I am traveling to Florida to be with my family on Thanksgiving, that's fair game because he's the one doing traveling. But the fact that he sort of hadn't, he didn't say, he hadn't done anything wrong yet. And he just basically said, we haven't figured it out yet, which I think is true for a lot of families. It was yesterday that I had to sort of, talk to my mom and be like, sorry, lady, you're out of luck.
You call your mom lady?
I think when you can't just give a direct answer like that, it does raise a question. Why not just say we have not firmed up our plans yet?
Or how about,
why not just be firm about it? Like he is everything else. He could just say that.
Well, how does he not know the answer? Go ahead, Lisa. I'm sorry.
His boy, he was sort of like, well, I'll let you know. And just sort of.
I think if he had that moment to do over again, he'd do differently. But, I think there's a difference between sort of saying, well, that raises questions and aha, you're going to violate your own rules. And a lot of the coverage, certainly not the Tribune, or sort of reputable news organizations, I think it tended too quickly to the ha-ha, I gotcha, sort of side of things.
I see what you're saying. I guess I sort of thought, what is going on here? And I think I come from another area. I sort of wish he wouldn't have, I'll say it. I kind of wish he wouldn't have gone into such detail. I was so crushed for her. And I'm seeing sort of people who may not be plugged into this, but are trollish without sort of getting on Twitter. I was like, oh God, I'm hoping you're not adding to sort of, the chorus here by talking about it. I felt somewhat protective of her, and I didn't go to that assumption. I had heard the rumors too, but I just assumed that a lot of this is baloney and I got to move on, and some of the stuff I write about is gossipy, but I definitely wouldn't.
You're a better person, Lisa. You're a better person.
I don't adhere to sort of, I'll pass through some of these blogs and somebody will say, oh, this person is on this vacation or they're there. I'm just not going to assume that it's even close to being true, and I probably am not going to delve into that. So yeah, but my head did not go to that, Heather. I guess, maybe it should have, but
I mean, that was exactly what I thought when I heard him say that. I said, oh God, he's worried about his, you know, this is his daughter. He's worried about that.
I just thought maybe it could have been like, I'm going to spend it with, it's just going to be the four of us. I just thought it could have been.
But his wife and daughter were already in Florida at that point. So then he's lying, right? So he could have said, and he probably wishes he said, nope, we're going to be at home. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
But I think he was, you know, sort of probably personally struggling with the fact that this whole sort of troll situation had sort of created a situation that he was going to be apart from his wife and daughter for Thanksgiving. And, you know, call me a softie, but, you know, he had a momentary of like, I just don't know what to say about this. Like, can't we grant him that grace before accusing him of being a hypocrite without actual facts and evidence? No,
absolutely. I agree. I think we're seeing it the same way, but differently almost. I just sort of felt like he could have just said, it's just the four of us. There's nobody else coming into this.
And but he couldn't have said that because he knew that right-wing people had known that his wife and daughter were in Florida.
Yeah, but I don't know that there are other people there. I don't know that. And I don't know that he doesn't have a private jet that can take him there, that he's not, you know, I don't know any of that.
Yeah, well, that would not have flown. I mean, he could not have said, don't worry, everybody, I'm going to fly my private jet to Florida, but yeah, you all stay here in lockdown Illinois. That's why I hear what you're saying, Heather, and I think we should grant him a misstep in front of the microphones. But boy, oh boy, he should have had that answer in his back pocket. You know, the other day we were talking about travel with Peter Greenberg, who's the Eye on Travel host at our radio station, and he's CBS National's travel expert. So he's pretty reputable. He still travels and he reports on it. And people were calling in. Our listeners had recently come back from Istanbul and Mexico and Florida, and they were telling us in this segment we were doing about what the airplanes in the airports were like and how good they were feeling, especially since there's a couple of vaccines. So we were all having this nice, happy, we're going to get out of this and travel someday vibe conversation. And then a world-weary doctor calls in, and he just said, you're killing me here, you know? There's no better way to ensure that we don't come back soon than everybody just start traveling. He said, you got to have a pina colada in Florida, and meanwhile, we are working 12-hour shifts. And it was a really sobering phone call, you know? That's the end of that story, but I don't know what your reaction to it is, but the idea that just because you can travel doesn't mean that it's not still going to strain the system. And this guy was the voice of that. He was a stark reminder, I'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, and the vaccine, once it even is widely available, will require two doses, and then you will have to wait a period for the immunity to develop. So I think a lot of people have this image of in their heads that they're going to go to like the CVS and get the shot and then go to a wild rave. You know what I mean? Like immediately afterwards.
Or Wrigley.
And that's just not going to happen.
But hey, 95, it's 90, then 94, then 95% advertised efficacy rates. Wow.
That's fabulous news. It's
my
really
God.
Unprecedented.
Oh, my gosh. One of them in the private sector, one of them government funded. But it's just it is the best possible. We sort of buried the lead here. The best possible news, yes, really, at this juncture is that, you know, I set my over under date as a result as 3:45 July 18th, 3:45 in the afternoon, July 18th is
when we can all start French kissing strangers again.
Yep. Again, mind you, again.
Remind me to avoid the Tribune area around the Tribune.
At 3:45 on July 18th, that's
going to be like that picture of the sailor kissing the woman in Times Square. It's going to be like that. We're going to be clustering around making out with
strangers. Well, what's your ballpark sort of, knowing what I know now, here's where I think I'm going to be comfortable in public places date.
I think it's about the same. I have high hopes for mid to late summer, maybe August, maybe a little bit later. But I'm looking forward to getting together with people and singing again. You know, I used to do that a lot, play music and sing with people, and I haven't done that since March. And I can imagine that starting to happen again in the summer.
Lisa, what's your over under date? I know you're going to, this is just going to torture you. You're going to go, well, I don't know when I'm going to feel safe.
Okay, John. Yeah, I enjoy being the punching bag on this. January 1st, 2026. See you then.
2026. Oh, no.
Okay. Heather, you got it? You want to play?
No, I agree with Eric. I think late summer is probably accurate.
Yeah. Well, what did we say last week? And I think I've heard it repeated this week that February, the front line will get it and the rest of us will maybe get it sometime in June or July. And if it takes a month or two for that to kick in, who knows? Maybe this time next year. Isn't it weird that last spring, July seemed so far away and now July is like, oh boy, goody, goody. But we're talking next July. Wouldn't it be swell if we could come out of our cocoons then? So until then, we do it via Zoom. Any last things you all want to chime in with?
Well, I wanted to bring up the indictment, the comment.
Oh, pardon me.
And the defections from the, I call them if troop. There were these whole Democrats who were saying, well, if these things were said about Madigan, then he should go. They were hedging their bets over the summer. And a whole bunch of members of IF Troop have now decided that they're going to call for Madigan to resign, step down from his leadership post. And there are now, I think, a critical mass of Democratic representatives in the House to deny Madigan the 60 votes that he needs to become Speaker again. So I think we're going to see, I think and I hope we're going to see an interesting power struggle for leadership of the House. And there's already one Democratic rep who's announced her candidacy, I think Stephanie Kifowit. I don't think she's going to be the one who will be his replacement. I'm thinking maybe Greg Harris, Representative Harris from Chicago. I don't know who else. I'm guessing that both Lisa and Heather are more plugged into Springfield stuff than I am. But.
No, I mean, I think that's the $64 million question. You know, if not Madigan, then who is really a brand new question for Illinois Democrats to confront. And I think that, that you know, people won't replace Madigan with, you know, nobody. Like, there's got to be somebody. There's got to be somebody. And we don't know who that is yet. But there's certainly been no groundswell of support for Stephanie Kifowit after she announced her candidacy a couple weeks ago. So
She was up there by herself at the news conference.
Yeah,
didn't have anybody standing behind her. Lisa, what do you hear about this?
Well, I mean, I think there's nobody solid. It's all like third hand. But I think that there is a question that it has to be unraveled here. The person who becomes the speaker also has to be a skilled, I mean, if it's a Democrat, it will be a Democrat. It's an overwhelmingly Democratic House. Also has to be a somewhat skilled in party mechanics, right? I mean, what Mike Madigan has amassed this power with the two sides of the roof here together because he's the most powerful Democrat in the state and he's the most powerful legislator. And so there's going to have to be a whole rethinking of this, because right now everybody's sort of wired to think, whether they say it or not, like, all right, well, we don't really want to get rid of him. He can keep it status quo during the pandemic. I've heard that.
Really?
Like, give me a break. I'm sorry. And I don't think I'm straining objectivity here. Thank you for that line, Heather. But I do not think that's straining objectivity. Give me a break. These are folks who are concerned. They understand the way the system is. So it's breaking up the whole system. And that's why it's very difficult, I guess, to get at who might do this. You know, who might step into this? That's a good call. I've heard that maybe a few times, not as much, but I think that could be a good call. He is a consensus builder, and he definitely could step into that role.
Is the TikTok in part on it? ComEd is regulated. They needed favorable legislation in Springfield. Mike Madigan, the House Speaker, could help with that. To grease the skids, the company hires a law firm favored by Madigan. They grant internships to kids. They employ people in do-nothing jobs. And the speaker says he knows nothing about it, but eventually we think he's either going to be criminally charged or at least these legislators you're talking about will vote to not have him be their speaker. Is that the backdrop on this?
That's, I think, a pretty good summary. My take on it is I don't know if they're going to ever get the smoking gun on him, if he's going to be indictable. Yeah. The thing is, there was a decade-long bribery scheme that ComEd was overseeing. And according to this indictment, they named four people who were heavily involved in this. And if Madigan knew about it, then he's a crook. If he didn't know about it, then he's incompetent. Because, this guy is a very meticulous person. And the idea that all this stuff is going on just under his nose and he didn't see it, and he's left the party open to this embarrassment, you forfeit your leadership role at this point.
How plausible is it, Eric, that he doesn't know?
I don't know. I don't think it's very plausible that he didn't know. But if he didn't, then he's not a very good leader. He needed to know. He needed to be aware of this kind of stuff.
Well, if he did know, wouldn't they have the evidence against him? Would we have heard charges more specifically by now? Well,
the fact that they didn't name him in the indictment suggests that they don't have the goods on him yet, and they may never.
Man, that'll make him the slipperiest of the slippery. If these crimes are so egregious, why can't they pin him?
He may have always maintained plausible deniability. He doesn't use email. He doesn't use cell phones. He's a very careful person. And again, there was a line that Mark Brown discovered in the first indictment. It had to do with the fact does anyone remember exactly what it was? But that which is understood need not be spoken. Something along those lines. Is that what it was? Very similar to that.
Something like that.
So this is he's not a blunt guy. He's not Blagojevich, you know.
Talking. Oh, he's the opposite.
A loose talker. But I think he's become a drag on the party. Finally, I think you can look at the failure of Thomas Kilbride to win retention. The campaign against him in the the Illinois Supreme Court district is heavily based on his ties to Madigan. Like, he's Madigan's favorite judge and so on. And I think he almost made it. He was at 56%, I think, and he needed 60% approval to win retention. I think it's pretty easy to argue that the Madigan factor drove him down, because Madigan's popularity, if you look at the polls taken by like the Paul Simon Institute, his popularity is like in the 20s, isn't it?
I mean, he ran unopposed.
Well, but that's in his district.
I know.
He doesn't run statewide.
No, that's why I have this theory, Eric. It works for congresspeople and state representatives. You get to vote in your own, district, but then you get to vote in somebody else's district too, but your vote doesn't count so much. Nancy Pelosi and Mike Madigan actually have a lot of impact in your day-to-day life, and sometimes even more than your local representative. So I think you should get a fractional vote in their retention as well. So while maybe somebody in California or over by Midway, where I don't live, they get a full vote, but I get a little say in this thing too. But just 1/50th, maybe. That's my theory. I'm flying that all around the radio airwaves here, and nobody's saluting it, I might add. It's not going anywhere.
I was laughing because we're talking about sort of like, okay, they seem to be nudging toward the speaker here. But Heather, I heard you on a panel last night, and I laughed when I think it was Per Schutt said on WTTW, like, this is all sort of a hired truck all over.
Yes.
Like, that's what I've been thinking all along, because I just started at the Sun Times and they did this story. Should I refresh, or do we all know what it is? The hired truck program was at the city outsourced these truck drivers to do work. It was basically like a bunch of people who were clouded in were getting these contracts. The headline or the series was called Paid to Do Nothing, I believe. And some of them had, I think, connections to the mob. And eventually it was broken up after the Sun-Times had shown a bright light on that. And the deal was that there were a lot of these folks seemed to have ties all the way up to Mayor Daley, and one of his right hand people went to prison, but it never reached that far. But there was it cast a long shadow. There are a lot of people who think that he would have gotten elected had he run in 2008, but that that Mayor Daley had just kind of grown tired of the whole game and decided to bow out.
Well, Heather, does the analogy include then the do nothing jobs? Was that the big crime there?
No, I think the analogy is that all of the people around Daly went down and he survived for, you know, another, you know, term in office, essentially. And that, you know, I think that what everybody is sort of waiting and watching to hear is that, is somebody going to actually find evidence that Madigan knew what was going on? Or is it just this sort of course he knew. If he didn't know, he's incompetent. We know he's not incompetent. But if there's somebody who stands up and said, look, I conspired with Mike Madigan to break the law, I think then we're in a different world. But that hired truck scandal proves that a savvy sort of head of, you know, sort of a situation can insulate himself or herself well enough to survive something like this. And I think that's where we are right now.
And there's a big difference between committing an offense that you can prove to put somebody in jail and a lack of oversight that would make it so that you should not be in this incredible position of power. To say that Mike Madigan should not be the Speaker of the House or should not be the chairman of the Illinois Democratic Party is not to say that we should send him to prison. I mean, those are two very different questions. And I think the standards for being a Speaker of the House or being the chairman of the party are very high. It gets back to what I was talking about Pritzker and having, you know, his having to behave in a certain way. Like, you know, yeah, it's a totally different standard. And I think that the sentiment now in the among the rank and file Democrats is that he has fallen below that standard. And it's time to for him to step down.
You know, Eric, I think you found for me then my 1/50th of a vote to get rid of Madigan. I need to vote for my local legislator and say, if you don't at least vote to unseat him from his speakership, then I'm not going to vote for you.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah, I don't want to do it that way. Okay, well, I want to vote him out. I'm going to move to Midway. I'm going to buy a house. I'm going to put a lawn sign for anybody but Madigan.
Make sure you end up in the 13th ward and not the 23rd.
I'll get it wrong. Don't worry, Heather. I'll absolutely buy the wrong house. Don't worry about that. All right. Heather, nice to have you join us again. Lisa, as always. Eric Zorn, you too. That's the end of this week's Mincing Rascals podcast. I'm John Williams. We're produced by Elif Garrison. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can now also follow us on Spotify, or you can keep listening online at WGNRadio.com.